Welcome to the Earth Body Mind Spirit Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Stokes, where we discuss all things related to your health, wealth, and happiness from an ecological perspective, blending the wisdom of the ages with the science of today. We also focus intently on how do we create individual health, wealth, and happiness while at the same time enhancing the conditions for life and enhancing the conditions for a thriving, vital society for all people. Today's interview is with Dirk Jan Oddsjoen, the CEO and founder of ForestWise. So you've heard of palm oil. You've heard that palm oil is one of the driving forces in deforestation around the tropics, and it has to be stopped. So there's not a lot of great ideas about stopping it. There are people promoting this idea of sustainable palm oil, which basically means that after we've destroyed the forest, we're gonna, you know, integrate a few little minor tweaks to call it sustainable. But ForestWise is different. ForestWise is taking an entirely different approach and creating a canopy economy. I don't know if that term exists yet, but they're totally doing it. And it should exist all over the world. I'm personally obsessed with this idea of how can we actually create economies that bring products out of wild spaces without damaging, with actually enhancing those ecosystems. We can have an economy that is creating ecosystems that incentivize people to preserve the forest, and that's exactly what ForestWise is doing. So I hope you get as excited as I did about this interview and the possibilities of having companies like ForestWise create these forest canopies that give people livelihood and give them incentives to keep those forests intact. And without further ado, my interview with DJ, the founder and CEO of ForestWise. So, DJ, thanks for coming on the show today. And I think probably the best place to start would be, you know, most people aren't going to know what ForestWise is. And they're not going to know what an Alipe nut is. And they're not going to know the basic concepts about, you know, getting products out of the forest versus chopping them down and putting in a palm oil plantation. You know, most everybody should know at this point that that's not a good idea. So well, let's just start there. Like what's the Alipe nut? What can we use it for? Like what products can you, do you produce, and how can they replace palm oil and other, products out of the forest?
All right. Thanks very much, Mike, for having us for this interview. So what ForestWise is doing is producing ingredients for food and cosmetics that are made from raw materials that we get from the rainforest, from the standing forest. So our company is based in Indonesia, in Borneo, actually. So it's the west part of Borneo, called West Kalimantan. And traditionally people have been using all kinds of products that are coming from the forest, and they basically can build their whole life on it. And one of the products that that we are using mostly, our main product, is Alipe nuts. So they are gathered from the rainforest after they fall to the forest floor, and then they are dried in the sun, and then we get the nuts to our factory, where we process it into Alipe butter. Alipe butter is a product that very much looks like cocoa butter or shea butter, but it has a slightly higher melting point. So it can be used indeed in chocolate. It is used already in chocolate. It's also used in any cosmetics product that you would normally see which have like cocoa butter in it. So for example, you can think about like solid lotion bars or bar soaps. Or any other kind of moisturizing products. You can use Alipe for that. It's a very good moisturizer.
Can I ask a question?
And now, sure.
So is it can it be a direct replace for palm oil or no?
No, it cannot. You cannot take it out the palm oil of one product and replace it with Alipe butter. Mm-hmm. Because of the different properties. And you also see, like in most cosmetic products, there's actually not an ingredient in there, which is palm oil, but there are a lot of ingredients in there that are derived from palm oil. So they are somewhere in the process, palm oil was going in there to be like the vegetable oil content, which is the cheapest that you can find. So that's what palm oil is used for, mostly in cosmetics. And we cannot just one-on-one replace that with a lipid butter, but we could use a lipid butter to make the products that are now made with palm oil as a derivative, and then using a lipid butter instead.
Okay, so just that I understand what you said, we can use the Olympic nut butter in the product, but it would have to be slightly reformulated because of the way they use the palm oil in the product. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And to get the exact same properties, you probably need to add a different product like
a coconut oil or something?
For example, yeah, okay. Exactly. Because then it needs to be basically like, for example, if you want to make the product more liquid or you want to have the same kind of viscosity, then you probably need to add oil still.
Right.
So it is not a one-on-one replacement, but you can basically make anything that you can also make with palm oil.
Right. Great. Let's drill down to some of the other products too. I think what might be really interesting for the people watching is if we could get it like just down to like, okay, I want to buy a bar of soap. So can I get a bar of soap that for me? Okay. So let me just take it right back to the simplest thing for me. I go to the store, I pick up a bar of soap, I see palm oil in it, I'm putting it back down. I'm not buying the palm oil soap. So you're working with brands that make soap, right? You're working with Lush, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
And then is there any other soap brands that you're working with?
It's actually complicated to give a name of a brand because we work with distributors all over the world.
They
sell it to brands. We don't always know to which brands they're selling it to. And sometimes it's still in the pipeline. It's not launched yet, which is, then we cannot say the names yet. But
I don't think that's what people really need to hear. What people need to hear is like, can I go and get a bar of soap that doesn't have palm oil in it and has Alipe nut butter in it? Does that exist right now?
Yes, Lush is making products with Alipe butter.
Okay.
And so do other brands in Europe as well, Korea. Mm-hmm. But another thing that is available in the US, like our products are also available through our distributor in the US called Onscent, as well as Jedwards International. So those are the and there are brands in the US working.
What are those two brands again? Can you say them?
So our distributor is called Onscent, Onscent.
Uh-huh.
And the other one is Jedwards International.
Can you spell that?
Jedwards.
International. And those are suppliers to the cosmetics industry, is that correct?
Yeah. Cosmetics and food, but mostly cosmetics. So like we sell our raw materials or our ingredients to them, and they sell it onwards to brands normally.
I see. Is it cool? And then is there like, so I recently did an episode on a local forestry company that's using FSC stewardship practices. And it's kind of one of the highest bars around here for our local forest practices. And I know in the Forest Stewardship Council system, there's like chain of custody stuff. So is there kind of like, is there that in the cosmetics industry as well, or is it different?
No, it is different, but there are definitely larger or growing number of initiatives like on sustainable production, sustainable cosmetics.
Like chain of custody stuff.
You mean like that the kind of like certifications or regulations that brands have to
I'm thinking in particular of the FSC label for wood, And there's a chain of custody that you're supposedly is intact from the forest to the product. And I'm wondering if there is a chain of custody certification for your product to the end product in cosmetics yet, or is that something that has yet to be developed?
I think, yeah, there are many different types of certifications that they all look at a certain aspect. So our products are Fair for Life certified, mm-hmm. which is basically a fair trade certification, but it does look at the whole supply chain.
Oh, good.
And also at environmental impact. We also have organic certification, and we are a member of the Union for Ethical Biotrade, which is also a worldwide initiative. And in the EU, I know, like, I'm actually not sure so aware of new regulations coming in the US, but in the EU, there is a new regulation called the EU Deforestation Regulation, which means that, for example, for palm oil, companies of a certain size, bigger companies, they have to show where the palm oil is coming from, to prove that it was not linked to deforestation, which I believe they have to show, like, it hasn't been deforested in the last 5 years, which is for a lot of plantations is not the case because they are older and you start only harvesting after 5 years. So
yeah,
like, active plantations are it's more about new plantations.
Yeah. Are you willing to talk about the palm oil industry and sustainable, or that whole thing? I don't want you to get you any trouble, because I don't have anything positive to say about any of it, but, do you want to talk about that, or maybe we should?
It is a job opportunity for the communities we work with. I mean, they basically do not have a lot of options,
mm-hmm.
because the products that are in the forest that I use for day-to-day activities and food and even for their electricity by the microhydros that they have in the forest, it is providing them with basic needs, but it's not providing them with income. Sufficient income to pay for school, to pay for transportation or medical care. Those are things, like, if they have those big expenses, they often have no other choice than to sell the land, for example, and to palm oil company, or to convert forest into palm oil, because that is the only product in the area where they know they can sell it, even though they're not going to, unfortunately, like, it's not a super good business. I think they're not going to make a lot of money out of it. But the only option is that, or going into gold mining, which is mostly it's illegal. It's mostly illegal. It's also using mercury oftentimes in the process, so it's very unhealthy and it's very dangerous, because they also make their own sort of mines going into the mountain, which are really super dangerous, and you hear. Every once in a while you hear of people passing away in those mines. So they really don't have a choice, and that's we understand that people then go for palm oil, especially if the price is higher, then there's an incentive to do that. And we are not saying that people shouldn't do that, but I think we should give them a better alternative, and with that alternative, keeping the forest standing. So if we can create markets around the forest that is still there, and actually make more income out of 1 hectare, then there is no reason to cut down the forest and to switch to another crop, but they can just do whatever they have been doing already for the last several hundred years.
That's great.
And make a living out of the standing rainforest.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. And so I was reading on your website that you've got, like, contracts with, like, 1,000 villages. Is that correct?
1,000 collectors.
1,000 collectors, sorry. Not villages, 1,000 collectors.
Yeah.
And so I imagine, I don't know, has it been, like, however many years ago you started the project? Was it back in the 2015-ish, or...?
2013. My wife and uh-huh. we moved to Indonesia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she was. She had an assignment to work for orangutan conservation,
mm-hmm.
and that was that was basically going to be an assignment for 4 months. And at the time, I had the possibility to join. Basically, quit the job because I was excited about the opportunity, and I thought, okay, let's see. And that 4 months became 5 years working for that that NGO.
What was the NGO?
I still enjoy it. It's the Masarang Foundation.
Can you say it again? Can you spell it?
It's Masarang. And we worked for that organization and related organizations for 5 years before we set up ForestWise.
Nice.
So the whole thing is actually like orangutan conservation. What the issue is that the forest is disappearing too fast, so there's no place for them to go. Yeah. They go outside of the forest and then they get captured or even killed.
Yeah.
So the main issue is that the forest is disappearing. So in order to support orangutans and all the biodiversity that is declining in high biodiversity areas, we need to make sure that the forest keeps standing. So from there we were getting involved in community development projects through that NGO, and we really saw an opportunity, like I just explained, that if we can create markets around these products, people do not need another incentive. It's just that there should be a market for it. So for example, if you provide free seedlings in a village or for anything to plant, so let's say avocado, but you distribute avocado trees, but there's no one in that village who ever went there to buy avocados or any product related to it. So there's no idea, there's no perception of that there's a market for it, because where are they going to sell it? So there's definitely no incentive to plant those trees, even though they are for free. But coming into a forest, buying ilipi nuts is a direct incentive. And even though it takes 10 years for these trees to grow, people immediately will start replanting, also collecting the ilipi nuts for selling it, but also replanting for future generations.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really like an eye opener. Like that there's no need for providing a lot of free stuff. It's just a need for creating
a market. So did this just kind of come to you guys? Did you have a background in this? Were you thinking like, how did you come up with the business idea?
Basically from the project we were doing with the NGO, like we just noticed like, okay, this works and this doesn't work. So we did a lot of different things. We tried a lot of different things, and we saw that, basically creating the market is the best way to do it, in our opinion, because all these farmers are entrepreneurs. And if we can give them something else to, like a different kind of business, then they're happy to switch to that. We just need to support them train them, like what kind of how do these products need to be prepared in the best way, mm-hmm. so that they have the right standards that we can sell it locally and abroad, and we have to really provide that market access. So without our factory being there, we wouldn't be able to process the products in the way we are doing, and we wouldn't be able to sell it at an international standard quality. There are a few things that we need to put in place, and it's also definitely a challenge to find customers to connect to the market. We were not from the industry. I come from an engineering background. My partner is also he's even much more technical than me. So we were getting involved in these projects, but we started from zero to go to the personal care industry, and now also food industry, to sell our products.
So what was, a lot of the listeners here are interested in what does it take to start and run a regenerative business. I just want to underline, you've got these pristine forests, right? That what's left of them. And from I saw on your website, what there's like 56% or 44% left, something like that, in Borneo.
Yeah, but that was a few years ago.
That was a few years ago.
I'm not sure how it is.
Shrinking
now,
yeah. rapidly, yeah. And, you know, it makes me think about, for example, are you familiar with the Brazil nut? So yeah. The Brazil nut, you know, it's pollinated by a native, I think, a fly. I don't know if I'm getting that correct, but it needs a forest canopy and it needs a thriving ecosystem for the Brazil nut, for the Brazil tree to yeah. thrive. And so you're creating this incentive yeah. where if you buy a Brazil nut, and this is again why I was so excited to interview, because if you buy a Brazil nut, you're actually incentivizing preserving the rainforest in the Amazon, and everybody, just like in Borneo, where the same thing's happening. And so yeah. I just want to underline and make clear to the viewer this idea that most companies are like, you know, I'm not going to ask you to talk about the palm oil plantations, but I'm going to talk about the palm oil plantations. It drives me bananas, the sustainable palm oil initiatives, because they're just taking a moment in time and saying, okay, we destroyed the forest X amount of years ago. And so now it's been so many years since it's been destroyed. So now we're going to call it sustainable. And then we're going to put in a couple of hedgerows and something. And I just, you know, to me, it's just greenwashing, you know? And so personally, I'm on a mission to try to find people like you that are presenting alternatives that are real, that have a real regenerative component, so that there is a natural incentive to keep the canopy intact and maybe convert palm oil plantations back to, you know, primary forest, so that we could have this. I mean, when I looked at your website, you have like, I don't know, it was six products.
We have six different ingredients. Yeah,
six different products that are coming out of the primary forest, correct?
Yeah,
right. Then I also saw you had sort of visions for a few more, like beeswax, and so I said there was rubber seeds or something else in there too. I wanted to underline for anybody who's listening or watching this idea of using the rainforest for the products themselves, and how as a consumer, that's the kind of product that we should be buying. I just wanted, can you comment on that or?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I fully agree. Like we need to, the rainforest is already there, and it's a result of hundreds or millions of years of evolution and best practices. And this is the most efficient way, like to grow products or to, yeah, I mean, grow products. It's just nature, but there are products in those ecosystems that we as humans can use, but we should use it respectfully and source it sustainably and make sure that we don't destroy the ecosystem there. So if we can take, without destroying anything, if we can take some part of that for making great products, and taking away the need, or at least the urgency to buy other products that are not that are not made with sustainably sourced ingredients, I think we can solve a huge part of the problem.
Yeah.
And if we do that in collaboration with local communities, we catch two birds with one stone. So.
Yeah.
Then
more than two.
We think that is the way forward.
Right. You get
more than two.
Yeah, you get the income for the local communities. You get the increasing the maintaining the biodiversity, and then if you get into agroforestry, you're increasing the biodiversity, and then also you're carbon sequestering, you know. And then creating biomass and biodiversity, and so it's a win on so many different fronts, and it is I'm so inspired by what you guys are doing, and I just hope that people will listen to this interview and to whatever else what you guys are doing there and see that this model can be replicated in every ecosystem on Earth.
Yeah, I'm sure it can. I would just have to look at what different products there are available in different parts of the world,
yeah.
Different types of
forests,
or even different kind of nature.
Right.
System.
Yeah. So, like we just talked about the Brazil nut, and we just got a package of wild Bristol Bay Alaskan salmon. And in Bristol Bay, Alaska, it's a very well-managed salmon run, which, you know, is utilizing a product from the local ecosystem in a well-managed way that the populations are managed. And then all the ecosystem services are being provided and we get this amazing product. And it's easier, I think, for people to think about something like, oh, wild salmon. Like they understand that. That's normal for them. But something like, oh, we're going to, you know, because I'm truly of the opinion that, you know, we could grow palm oil sustainably if it was in a canopy environment. You know, I really do think that monoculture is the problem. You know, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
No, yeah, definitely agree. It's the way things, it's not the crop itself. The tree has done nothing wrong, but it's the systems that it's grown in, the way it's grown. We understand that, of course, from an economic perspective, that you want to have just one crop, just one facility. You get the same raw material every day to your facility that you process in the same way. So, of course, it's much more challenging to work with 10 different crops coming from one area, and to create businesses around that. You need sometimes 10 different kinds of customers around those 10 products. So that is what makes it challenging. It's the only way to go, we think, because if we have monocultures all over the world, there's also no space really for humans to live in this environment.
I think along that same idea, it may be that we're running up against the 19th century thought patterns that are kind of that are still stuck, you know, and it's so I think, you know, in the time of AI, in the time of robotics, you know, I don't think technology is not the enemy. The technology can totally help us. Like, there's no reason that with this we can master the complexity. I mean, the complexity that we're mastering as human beings on all these other economic fronts is insane. You know, so just like embracing the complexity of a rainforest and creating economic systems around that, it's a no-brainer. I mean, they're making these we're so close to self-driving cars, and we're still trying to figure out how to harvest 7-10 different products out of a rainforest. I mean, come on. The capacity is there.
Yeah, I mean, of course. Yeah, no, the capacity is there. It's just a willingness. We need to have the willingness, and all everyone needs to be in the game. Yeah. So it is indeed more challenging. And I say 7 or 10 products, but of course, in a rainforest, that there could be hundreds of different products that have some kind of use that could be potentially sustainably harvested. I'm not saying we have to take everything out of there, but we can take bits and pieces. And I also really want to stress that you hear often, like, a monoculture system or a palm oil plantation is the most efficient way to produce vegetable oil. That is often the argument used by those industries that we shouldn't move to another crop because it will only need more land. For example, we don't want to replace all palm oil with sunflower oil because it will even need more space. So, and that is true. But you shouldn't compare, one monoculture with the other. If we look at a forest system, in a monoculture plantation, or at least a palm oil, you have 144 trees in 1 hectare. But in a forest, you have easily 1,000 trees in 1 hectare that are growing in different heights, different space, so that they are growing sort of all together in one space. And you have a lot more products that come from that area. It's not only vegetable oils, but it's also construction materials. It's also fruits, things you can eat directly that don't have to process first. So you have to look at it in a different way. And it can still actually produce much more compared to a monoculture plantation.
No, that's amazing. That it's I truly think it's the answer, you know. Maybe let's shift a little bit of gears and talk a little bit about, what are some of the biggest, I guess you just touched on one of the myths, you know, the myths is that, you need a monoculture plantation in order to produce the products. And it's less efficient. It's more, it's easier, right? It's just easier. Yeah. It's not more efficient in terms of producing material and producing products. So we can throw that argument out and we'll let the mainstream catch up with us. what about, you know, let's talk to the budding ecopreneurs and the do-it-yourselfers and the eco-consumers. Let's start with the eco-consumers. So what do you think? So we talked a little bit about like the, everybody needs to be on board. Like it needs to be a cultural shift. We need, and it's happening, you know. In my world of YouTubing and podcasting, I hear about some big podcasters now, the Gen Z, they're really taking this on like at a level that, yeah. You know, us older folks didn't, you know, I always tried, but the mass community, it didn't get to. So it's the culture starting to change. So then I guess the question that I have for you is from your position and inside the company, trying to make the products, trying to get them out there. What's the biggest thing that needs to change that, you know, a consumer like me, or the people that are listening, like what can we do to move this ball forward?
Yeah, I think we need to keep asking questions to companies that we buy products from, like how do they source their products? And they might say, okay, it's sustainably sourced. In your example, you talked about sustainable palm oil. What does that mean? Does it mean that there are no pesticides and no fertilizers used in the processing? Does it mean that it grows in a natural ecosystem, kind of like an agroforestry setup, or is it still monoculture? What happens to the water around those areas? Yeah. Is the soil still drained? Is the water still polluted, or is it really produced in a way that it doesn't have any negative effect on the environment? Which is with the branded sustainable palm oil, I think mostly not the case.
I mean, so I'm gonna go out on a limb there and say like it's not. You know, the one thing that I am curious if you've heard, so they can get mad at me. They don't have to get mad at you. Because it's just I just don't think it's possible. The one thing that I heard that I think sustainable palm oil is if there is palm oil that is being built, that is being grown in a canopy system. So are you aware of any palm oil plantations that are being grown in a canopy system?
No, but I think the tree or the plant itself comes originally from Africa. Mm. So there it does grow in natural ecosystems and in the wild. So the palm oil coming from those areas could very well be sustainably mm-hmm. produced. I also understand that we cannot just from one day to the next we cannot just switch to another product. We don't want to find one oil that replaces palm oil. That's not going to solve all the problems. It's really the way we produce products. We look at the body cream, for example. So how can we make that product? What kind of ingredients can we use? That are harvested or are produced in a sustainable way to produce those other products, and so we need to look at the brands, like how do they go about sustainable sourcing, what do they use in their products, and need to make sure that they can have the ingredients that to make great products without destroying the rainforest.
So as a consumer, are there what are there any certifications that are doing that?
I don't think there is an overall certification. So the best would be, I don't think that I can say there's this certification. If it has that on the packaging, then you're sure it's completely.
Okay. Yeah.
I think you should look at the individual product, and that's also, it's a lot of work if you really want to dive into it. But or you ask your favorite brand, like, okay, what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, where are your materials coming from? And what is the social and environmental impact of those ingredients? And if they have a good answer, or if they have, if they have really thought that through, then you will see immediately, I think, how they go about that.
You know, I'm just going to, so it is really frustrating from the consumer standpoint. It's very difficult. I'm hoping for, so for example, I want to buy coffee, right? I love coffee, but it's very difficult for me to get certified shade grown coffee. Like, it should be super simple. I should, there is certifications out there, but it's very difficult for me to find that. So, I'm just going to put out a hope there that hopefully someone who watches this or listens to this is working on some sort of certification program that's going to be a simple chain of custody. And really, I think, obviously there's so many issues and it can be very complicated. But if we just make it simple, like, we're keeping the canopy intact, and we're honoring mm-hmm. the indigenous people that live there and their rights and their income, or we're even regenerating canopy, that's a good start. If we could just have a certification that had like a canopy certification on it, that would really, really help. So hopefully someone who's watching this can start that program.
Yeah, but I also think that, like, certification is not always the answer, because it's putting a burden on companies like us, because you need to get certified. It costs a lot of money. It costs a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So you have to do you have to do quite a lot to get those certifications in place that are required by industries. And as a small company, that can be a huge burden.
Right.
So it is actually impossible for... it makes it impossible for our local communities to produce their own products with that certification, because it's just
really too expensive. Maybe I'll backpedal. Okay, maybe the certification isn't the answer. I'm trying to speak to the eco-consumer and try to answer some of the problems. So I don't know the companies that, like, personally in the cosmetics industry or in the food industry, like, I don't know who to trust when it comes to tropical oil additives. Like, I don't know who the other products that you guys are selling, but for example, in clothing, I know I can trust Patagonia, right? Like, Patagonia's, and I also know I can trust Dr. Bronner's, because they're another certification program that I'm working with is Regenerative Organic Alliance, and they're trying to go beyond organic and try to do regenerative. But the point I'm trying to make is that maybe as us eco consumers, if we can, I think the biggest challenge that I'm facing right now in this interview, because I want to buy your product, and I don't know. I mean, I know I could get, I guess I could go to Lush and I could get their stuff, but that's the biggest.
Yeah, and I keep thinking. Sorry, I just want to mention the name of the other brand, and I know it's using it, but I. Not sure if I remember the name correctly. I think it's Essential Botanicals.
Oh, okay.
Does that ring a bell? From Boulder, Colorado.
Great.
So they use the lippy butter, I know, in our products. But if we look up the name after this.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic, because, on our end, on the consumer end, like, we always see what's on the shelf, So hopefully people care enough and they're watching this video and they're like, okay, now I know that from Forest Wise, I can get a leaping head butter in the Lush, and I can get an Essential Botanicals, at least in the United States. And then in Europe, there would be their own product streams. But that's great.
And there's Latsons, a brand called Latsons as well.
Cool. What's it called?
Latsons.
How do you spell that?
Ladsons.
Cool. Great. Okay. Now to the ecopreneur side of things, if you could give yourself advice back when you were starting this whole thing, like, what would you tell your younger self? And because we need more. We need more use, basically, right? We need all the Gen Zers to go out there and start these companies. We need to be doing more of this type of nature-inspired biomimicry. You know, using the ecosystem as our creation model, and then work inside of the forests themselves to create incentives to maintain and expand them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And to come back to your coffee point just now, there's also a company called Slow Coffee, mm-hmm. Which is doing just that. So some company to look up as well. And there's, for example, Mahora Hora, who make Arenga sugar in Indonesia. So they're also using in the same way, using the forest system. But I now only have mentioned two examples, and there are a few more, but it's not like there's hundreds of examples that I can give. And that's, I really hope that we can inspire people to, with this conversation, to do this. What you need to have as an entrepreneur, I think, is persistence, because it's not going to be as easy, but I think no business is easy to really set up. And if you have a passion for it, we really see every day directly the benefits of what we are doing. So that is really inspiring and keeping us motivated all the time. Every time we visit the communities, you feel like, okay, we need to continue this, because we are really making a difference and we are making things better, and people are asking what else we can do, what other products we can take from there. And also, like, the regulations are changing in our benefits, because it's like the no deforestation law. There's also a new due diligence law. So also regulations are pushing companies now to look at their supply chains, make it more sustainable. There's also carbon, of course, like mapping your carbon footprint and trying to reduce that in your own supply chain. I think there's really a lot of things happening around the world that are going in the right direction. Hopefully, we can speed things up and we can, we can do this all before. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good things happening.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about the doomsday scenario. Those are already all over the news.
No,
we can focus on the good news.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it is possible. I think that's the main message also we want to bring out there.
Yeah.
So, just start. We just have to start.
Yeah. And what have been your biggest challenges along the way?
I think it definitely at the start to get the first customers in, because it took like a good 3 years, I think, to really get bigger customers on board. And you need to have the bigger customers on board to reach the scale, to be able to set up a factory, to make a meaningful impact. So that was the main challenge, and it's still a challenge. Like I said, all these things that are happening now are pushing companies into our direction. Yeah. So I think a main difference with 5 years ago when we started is that we are now having those conversations with larger off-takers. And they are asking for traceability, to give an example, which is not a question that was asked 5 years ago when we were already fully traceable. So I think definitely things are changing. And instead of certification, traceability could be another thing. So we have what we do as a company is making our supply chain as traceable as possible. We're now going to use a mobile app, an existing app, to put our whole buying process and certification process on that app, so that we can make it more visible for our customers. And make it even more transparent. And that is giving you access to, like, if you scan your Lush product you see, okay, Elipi is in there, where does it come from? You can even see which farmer has harvested these nuts, so where his forests are. You can look at the map to see what the forest looks like. And you could get a lot of, as much as possible, information.
Is that coming
to
out?
See, like, okay,
is that coming out new? Is that like right now or soon or?
Yeah, that is in the coming months. We have a new harvest coming up for Elipi, okay. And we are integrating all the farmers that take a contract on that system in the next 2 months. So when I think in the next year, I think you could you could get that information if you buy a product that uses our ingredients.
Wow, that is really cool. Well, let's circle back to that one in the future. I want to cool, use that. That'll be great. Okay. So I like to ask this question of everybody. I have another 70 questions for you, but maybe we can come back and do this in the future again. Sure. Yeah, I'm totally inspiring. This may be too big, but I just something I like to ask everybody. Like, what do you think is the most important thing that people can do right now to turn the ship around? You know, like, you're doing your part. Like, what do you think the rest of us should and could be doing?
I think, just look at your own patterns. Look at what are you consuming and what are you using? How do you live? I think that a lot of people are doing that already, and I think that's where it starts. It starts with yourself, and if you have a doubt about a product that you're using, like how well is it sourced? Ask the questions to the manufacturer, is it sourced, and are there things to improve there? And are they aware of more sustainable alternatives, for example? Because that will push companies into directions of companies like ours. But I think, just starting with doing the best you can yourself is already going to make a huge difference.
Great, awesome. And are you guys involved at all in any of? You know, for example, I'm just thinking about DIYers right now. So we didn't spend too much time on DIYers, but years ago, I did a batch of soap. It was great. Yeah. Everybody loved it. Didn't use any palm oil. You know, I used coconut oil. I used, I think, cacao maybe a little bit, and I used a couple of those. The most sustainably sourced that I could find, which was very difficult. Can someone like me just buy Alipe nut butter from Forest Wise, or does it have to be like through a retailer or something like that? Like, if I wanted to do a DIY project, or I wanted to like just make a small batch of soap for my community or something like that.
Yeah, it depends on where you are in the world. But in the US, you could buy it from JetWorks from Onscent, because Onscent really has a web store, I believe. JetWorks, if you have a brand or you want to set up a brand, then you can go to Onscent to get all of our ingredients.
Great, that's cool. So maybe some future entrepreneur is gonna start an Etsy channel and start making Alipe nut butter soap. You guys do this. Take this idea and run with it. Yes. It's great. And you know, it should be marketed as regenerative. You know, it's like sustaining, right? Oh, I think I saw on your website. Let's close on this one. I think I saw on your website that you guys were potentially moving into regenerative agroforestry as your next phase of maybe replenishing some forest lands. Is that happening or?
For the replanting, we have done that. And it's really super challenging. And I think our conclusion is after 2 years of trying to go into that direction, is that we think our expertise is really into developing markets, and there are other organizations that are doing great work with reforestation already. Yeah. So I think we should focus on creating the markets. For the coming year, we will add rubber and arenga sugar, which is like a coconut sugar. It looks like coconut sugar. So those two products are products that are growing everywhere in the West Kalimantan, the arenga sugar everywhere in Indonesia. Right. That have a huge impact on income from farmers. We can double their income, at least from those areas. They have the trees in their backyard already. It's just a way of slightly differently preparing those products, connecting them to a different kind of customer. And that will be our focus. And that should actually in itself already incentivized to regenerate more
forest. That's awesome. And you know, it makes me think about, you know, I'm part of the creator economy, and this world of businesses has just blown up around, you know, social media, YouTube, podcasts and stuff. It's the same exact thing that needs to happen around this forest canopy economy. Like, all it's like you guys focus on creating the markets for those products, and then somebody else will focus on the agroforestry part, and then somebody else will focus on the sustainable transportation part. It's like, it's this whole thing that, you know, I'm just planting seeds in people's minds so that they'll start building these other companies to surround you. So
great. Yeah. Thanks very much. No, I think that's indeed what needs to happen and what is fortunately already happening.
So good. Well, if you're open to it, I'd love to have a follow-up interview in the future, check back in with you, maybe cover some other topics, maybe some more of the technical deep goals. We didn't really get into the other products that you're doing. Again, thank you so much for coming on the episode. Is there anywhere you'd like people to be directed to contact you and get information about you and the business?
First of all, thanks for having us. It's been great, and I'm happy to come back anytime to talk more. I think the easiest way to go is just to our website, which is forestwise.earth.
Okay.
And because there you can be redirected to our resellers as well, or you can get in contact with us through our email sales@forestwise.earth or info@forestwise.earth.
Great. And I'll put links.
And can follow us on social media, of course.
And I'll put links in the description below so people can click to all that stuff. Thanks so much for watching or listening. The best way to support the channel is to subscribe, if you haven't already, to our YouTube channel or to the podcast. And the best way to support the ideas that we're promoting is to share them with people that you think might be interested or influenced by the good, positive ideas that we're trying to promote. If you have questions for me, please leave those in the comments. I will read the comments. If you know someone who's doing amazing work that you think their ideas should be shared with the world, please leave them direct message in the comment to me, and we will hopefully have them on the show. And lastly, thank you for being someone who cares about the earth. Until we meet again, the next podcast is going to be an interview with the Union for Ethical Biotrade, which was mentioned in this podcast. I contacted them after this podcast, which I think is a really interesting certification that in the United States, at least, most of us don't know about. So I'll be having an in-depth conversation with them about the ins and outs of what their certification means and how we can trust it and what kind of brands you can find on it. And lastly, if you're interested in personal coaching, ecopreneurship, I have offerings of classes and one-on-one coaching and sometimes some products. And those are always updated in the description below. So have a wonderful day, and thanks for being one of the good guys.